great. First, we have a tangent from yesterday still. We're on Nun Hei Amud Aleph. We are at the Tanu Rabbanan, 7 or 8 lines down. But yesterday we talked about using fresh figs as truma for dried figs and dried figs as truma for fresh figs, and the question of whether we go by the count or do we go by the volume, do we go by what it was originally, what it is now. So this is just a wrap up of that discussion, and introduces us to really a very interesting debate about what my priorities are when I separate truma. On the one hand, I would look for durability. I want to make sure that the truma is going to endure. I don't want to separate something as truma and then have it go bad on the kohen before he gets it or right when he gets it. On the other hand, you want to take something nice. You don't want to give him something that he's going to look at and say, well, that's the truma, that's what you think of kohen, and that's what you think of your mitzvah. So which is my priority? Giving him something that'll last, or giving him something that's particularly nice? And that's a discussion in the Mishnayos in Trumos. And it comes into play here in the discussion about using dried figs, which are considered less nice but more durable, or using fresh figs, which are nicer, but they're not going to last as long. The assumption is going to be in the Braisa that we're about to read that you're tithing by minyan. You're doing it based on number, not based on volume. And that's important in terms of the discussion that we had yesterday. So Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa says about 7-8 lines down on Nun Hei Amud Aleph, Tormin Te'inim ala Grogros B'makom Sheregilin Lasas Te'inim Grogros. That's our Reisha. The Reisha says you can use fresh figs as your truma when separating 4 dried figs. And again, Rashi says, B'minyan, you're doing it by count here. U'B'makom Sheregilin Lasas Te'inim Grogros, where they normally turn their fresh figs into dried figs. And Rashi explains 2 points. Shemitsuyin anashim sheyasum and grogros, that there are people who turn these into dried figs and therefore viyishtamru, they will endure. So you'll have the option of making them something more durable. Oh, not you, but the kohen. Oh, who atzmo yasa osam grogros lachazmanim te'inim shalo. Or ultimately, he, the kohen, is going to turn them into dried figs along with his fresh ones. Or maybe it's him himself. Maybe it's not the kohen. It's the person who actually separated them as truma. But the point in the reisha is you can use fresh figs on behalf of the dried ones. That's number 1. And then number 2, the Seifa, Velo Grogros al Ta'inim, Vafila B'makom Shuragim La Saz Ta'inim Grogros. You're not allowed to separate dry figs on behalf of fresh figs, even though you're doing it b'minyan. You're doing it by count. There's no issue of cheating the Kohen. Vafila B'makom Shuragim La Saz Ta'inim Grogros. Even where people ordinarily do make fresh figs into dried figs. That's my Reisha, that's my Seifa. Now we have to make head and tails of it. So the Gemara assumes first regarding the Reisha. We said, Tormin Te'inim ala Grogros, you use the fresh figs on behalf of the dried, B'makom Sheregiyan Lasas Te'inim Grogros, where that's normally done, where people normally convert into dried figs. So B'makom Sheregiyan in, B'makom She'ein Regiyan lo. You can only do it if it's a place where they make dried figs. Okay? So in other words, even though the fresh figs are nicer, you can only use them if the ultimate result will be dried figs. In other words, I prize durability over beauty. That's the key in the ratio. I prize durability over beauty. You can only use the fresh figs, which everybody agrees are nicer. I can only use them if they're going to last for a long time, because people here turn them into dried figs. So I look at durability. Say, hey, Chidami, what's your case? Eat the Ika Kohen. If they're calling him around to take him and eat him, then Makom Shena Ragila Milo. Why is it that it can only do this where they make dried figs? Why do I care about durability? I'll give it to the Kohen. The Kohen will eat it and finished. Vatnan Makom Shiyesh Kohen Tari Minayafa. We have a mission in Trumos that tells us that if you have Kohen around, you use the nice stuff. You don't worry about durability. You give it to the Kohen. He'll have it by nightfall. They'll be eaten. So why are we prizing durability in the Reisha? El Apshita, they're like a Kohen. It must be. There's no Kohen around. But then Ema Seifa, look at the Seifa where we said we don't want you using dry figs. Velo grogros ala te'inim, you can't use the dried ones to tie the fresh ones. Vafilu b'makom shuragi lasas te'inim grogros, even where people normally do convert them into dried figs. Rashi says, I don't care that the Kohen ultimately makes these into dried figs, and therefore he hasn't lost anything. But I don't understand. V'idah like a Kohen, if there is no Kohen around, which is what I assumed in the Reisha, that's why I prized durability, because I didn't have a Kohen to give it to. So then I'm like, then why can't I use dried figs? That's what you want to use. V'atanan, makom shein kalein, tarim in a miskayim. We've learned that where there's no kalein around, you dafka go for durability. So the resha, I prize durability, and the seifa, I prize beauty. I prize the nicer stuff. So what's going on? Elo pshita de'iga kohen. If I'm prizing the beautiful ones that aren't so durable, it must be there's a kohen around. So resha deleka kohen, seifa de'iga kohen. How do I make heads or tails of this? I have to assume that in the resha there's no kohen. That's why I want it to be durable. But in the seifa there is a kohen around, and therefore I don't care about durability. I just want to get the beautiful ones. So am I really supposed to read this way? Resha deleka kohen, seifa deika kohen. The answer is the resha is where there is no kohen around, and the seifa is a different set of facts. It's a case in which there is a kohen. The Amar of Papa, and Rav Papa says, Shema mino, we see from here, Dachkinon umokminon masnisin betray tami, velo mokmina betray tanoi, that when you're faced with a single source, it's better to say, you know what, the two cases are actually two different sets of facts, even though there was no indication whatsoever in the text that was so, rather than say that it's a machlokes tanoim. In terms of how this would be a machlokes tanoim, there are two different approaches. Tosfos says that my assumption would have been that the Reisha is the Rabbanan, and the Seif is Rabbi Yehuda. In Trumos, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan about whether I go with the nicer stuff, or whether I go with the more durable stuff. So I would say, this is in Achanami, this is the machlokas. That's what I would have assumed between our Reisha and our Seifa, that our Reisha, which says that you go with the durable, is following the Rabbanan, and the Seifa that says you go with the more beautiful one is following Rabbi Yehuda. That's what I would have said, and Rav Papa saying, but we don't do that. The other approach, the Shita Mekubetzis' approach, is that I would have assumed that our Brisa disagrees with the Mishnah. The Mishnah prioritized one way, our Brisa prioritizes a different way. One prizes beauty, and the other prizes durability. And that would have been the other way to take it. But we don't, we reject both of those, and we say we'd rather avoid creating Machlokes Tanoim if we can. We like having our Tanoim agree with each other, even if it means that we have to read the case is a little differently. The upshot of the discussion, again, is that we do prize durability over desirability if we're concerned about it being ruined. We don't say, give the coin really nice, expensive stuff that's not going to last till tomorrow if there isn't a coin around to eat it. Good lesson in life. Mishnah. Okay. We return to the discussion now about the mincha and the mincha becoming chametz. Mishnah says, Kol ha-menachos niloshos b'poshrin. All the menachos can be kneaded in lukewarm water. U'mishamran shalo yachmitzu, and just be careful that they shouldn't become chametz. Remember that there's a discussion about this regarding matzah. Regarding matzah, we don't want to keep it in warm conditions where it could easily become chametz. We need to avoid that. Regarding a mincha, though, we have no such concern. The Mishnah and the Gemara in Psachim in Lamed Vav Madalef discusses this and explains that it's because here there's reason. When you're dealing with things being done in the Beis Hamikdash, people are much more careful and they're energetic. I heard Rabbi Taub, but I recall sometime back, translate Zrizus as alacrity. I don't know if you can say alacritous as an adjective, but they're more alacritous. They're more careful and they're more energetic about doing this properly. And therefore, you have to. You can use lukewarm water when you need the mincha. This was actually quoted by Shlomo Kluger in his opposition to machine matzah. One of his arguments was, you can do this for a mincha. You can't do this when you're dealing with matzah that everybody deals with. And his point was that when you're dealing with matzah, you have to be much more careful in the standards that you set because everybody's creating matzah and it's given over to people who are not careful, not in a Beis Hamikdash, and therefore therefore all sorts of problems can start. It can become chametz. So he says here, when you're dealing with the menachos that are not supposed to become chametz, that's okay. This is the Beis Hamikdash, niloshes b'poshrin, you can knead them in lukewarm water. Just be careful, they shouldn't become chametz. And if any part of it becomes chametz, even the shirayim, not the kometz, but the remainder, over below sase. Guess what? You violated the lo sase. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, kol ha-mincha asher takrivu l'Hashem, lo se'aseh chametz. That's not regarding the shirayim point. That's about the point of mishamran shlo yachmitzu. Rashi says we're careful that it shouldn't become chametz because the pasuk says don't let it be made into chametz. The pasuk is teaching me that it's not just puzzle, it's not just disqualified, but there's actually an isser involved. In other words, I might have thought menachos, most of the menachos have to be matzah. If it becomes chametz, so it's not a kosher mincha. Bring something else. No, more than that, it's actually an isser. I violated a prohibition by letting it become chametz. The second part of the Mishnah, v'chayav alishasa v'alarichasa v'alafiyasa. I am liable for each individual step of the processing. The Gemara is going to spell that out for us, step by how I know that. But the kneading I'm liable for, the aricha, which we said is the forming of the dough, as well as the afia, the baking, every step of the way that I process chametz, I am chayev. So the Gemara wants to know, mina hani mili, where does this come from? I brought you two psukim there on your sheets, one from Vayikra Beis, one from Vayikra Vav. The one from Vayikra Beis says, kol mincha shetagivu l'Hashem lo se'aseh chametz, it shall not be made into chametz, indicating any step along the way. Whereas the one from Vayikra Vav says, lo se'afeh chametz, it shall not be baked as chametz, so it highlights one of the malachos that's involved, the baking. Chalkam nasati osem eishai. We'll come back to the rest of the pasuk in a little bit. The Gemara says, "Menan imili." How do you know that the shirayim should not become chametz? Oh, that's from Chalkam. The Amar Eish Lakish Damar Kra Lo Se'afeh Chametz Chalkam. They shall not be baked as chametz, even part of them. This is one of those cases in which the drasha completely ignores the trup. Because the trup is lo se'afeh chametz, chakam nasatios, etc. Their portion, not the portion of the mincha, it is the portion of the kohanim that I have given to them from my karbanos. Nonetheless, we are reading it as lo se'afeh chametz chalkam. Even a portion of them shall not be baked as chametz. Afilo chakam lo se'afeh chametz. To which the Gemara says, "V'hai la'ach Yehuda asa, you use it for that purpose. Hai mi bayalei, we need that. L'chadisanya for the following brisa. Lo se'afeh chametz. The Torah tells me it shouldn't be baked as chametz over on Nunhei Amud Beis. Ma Talmud Lomar, what does that teach me? V'alo k'ranemar, lo se'aseh chametz. You already said don't make it as chametz. Obviously that includes baking. Why do you need to specify baking? L'fishnemar, lo se'aseh chametz. Yachol lo yechai v'ala achas al kula. The pasuk says it shall not be made as chametz. I might think that means specifically you're liable once. You made it as chametz. Now you're liable and finished. Tamar lomar lo se'afeh. Therefore I have lo se'afeh. Shall not be baked. Afia bichlal haisa. Afia was. Baking was part of the general process of making the mincha. Lama yatzis. Why is it that they specify baking? Lahaki shalea to link to it and say, Ma'afia miyuchedes shimase yechidi, v'chayav anolav bifnei atzma. What's special about baking? Well, it's maise yechidi, which Rashi explains means maise chashuv bifnei atzmo. We're on the top of Nunhei Amud Beis. That it is a special act on its own, and v'chayav anolav bifnei atzma, the pasuk tells me I am liable for baking specifically. Afani avi lishasa v'arichasa, the same thing is true regarding kneading and forming the dough. V'chom maise yechidi sheba, and any other special action, any other important action in the processing, what are you including? Le'suye kituf. That's meant to include kituf, which Rashi says refers to smoothing the surface of the dough with water. Shemachlik panei abamayim. The shumaisa yechidi v'chayav anolav bifnei atzma. It's an individual step in the process. You are liable for it. When we talk about maisa yechidi, I think the definition of maisa yechidi is if you had a cookbook giving you a guide to how you make it, would it outline this as an individual step? Everything that you have to think about and do in order for this to become the end result is going to be a unique step. And that's our point here. Even though I would have that's thought right. This is insignificant.
I mean, does the Mishnah when it says warm water mean it, you're required to use warm water?
Right. I don't believe so. I believe it's an option because it's something that I would have thought you couldn't do because by matzah we don't let you do it, right. And kamash malan that you're allowed to use it. If I'm a kohen, I prefer to use poshrin. I don't want my hands sitting in freezing water.
Is that the reason?
Because that would be your preference.
So it's got something to do with warm water makes it rise. It looks nice.
Well, you don't want it to rise. This is you're trying to keep it as matzah, keeping it looking nice. I don't see why. It'll certainly mix better. Just from a chemical standpoint, you'll get a better mix of your solid and your liquid in a warmer temperature.
He quotes the Zohar Nishta basically says that it has to be capable of becoming chametz with warm water.
Right, so that's an interesting discussion, but we say that even with cold water it's capable of becoming chametz. Chazon Ish's point is, we say in Psachim that kol she'yeshno b'batocha chametz yeshno b'kumecho matzah, and we tie that in the Gemara to say that the flour has to be capable, the dough has to be capable of becoming chametz in order to be acceptable as matzah. So they talk about that with May Peros, that's one of the discussions there. But even with cold water we say that it can become chametz, it'll just take longer.
Except Minamuchar, I guess it's warm water.
Interesting. Could be. It's possible. So the Gemara's problem, though, is that you took lo se'afeh chametz chelkam as your source for saying that no part of it should be allowed to become chametz. But I use that same pasuk in order to teach me that every unique step along the way, every ma'ase yechidi, carries separate liability if it becomes chametz. So which way are you using this pasuk? So the Gemara answers, that's no problem. It's a big pasuk. Anan me'chelkam kam rinan. We deduced this from chelkam. Chelkam was what taught me about the requirement that each individual part remain as matzah. No part of it can become chametz. Whereas I learned the lesson about the processing from te'afet. Two separate things. So that's all it's for. Ve'ema kulei lahachihuda asa. But maybe not. Maybe the entire clause is needed for this purpose. This purpose of even that no part of it can become chametz. No. Imkein lichtov chelkam lo se'afeh chametz. Then you would have had to put the word chelkam first. No portion of it may become chametz, which of course would have completely wrecked the pshat meaning of the pasuk of chelkam nasati osame yishai. But my lo se'afeh chametz chelkam shamet minotarte. You can deduce two things: one based on the word order, and the other is based on this use of afia as opposed to asiya. End of that piece of the conversation. We now convert over to the discussion about the individual activities and the Torah specification of afia versus versus asiya. Ve'ema afia deparat barachmana lechayiv chada inoch lechayiv chada kulu. Maybe the Torah said it shouldn't be made as chametz. That's my overall. And then it said lo se'afeh chametz. It shouldn't be baked as chametz. That teaches me about afia. So maybe there's liability for afia, and there's liability for the rest. But not that there's liability for each individual step along the way. Think about it regarding Shabbos. This is the classic discussion regarding Shabbos and the malachos. The Torah only specifies one malacha, which is Havara, right. Lo Svaru Esh B'chomosh V'Seichem, don't light a fire. Other than that, it just says don't do malacha. And we have our classic discussion in the Gemara and Shabbos whether the Torah specified Havara in order to teach me Lalav or Lachalik. Is it teaching me separate liability for each one, or is it teaching me that there's unique liability when it comes to Havara, that Havara is special? Same discussion here. The Torah says in general don't make this chametz. And then it also says don't bake it as chametz. So is that to teach me that baking has unique liability, or is it to teach me I'm liable for each step individually? It's the same discussion. So so over here we're asking, maybe the Torah specified afia to teach me there's separate liability for afia, but not that there's separate liability for each unique step. So he explains, Mishum dahava davar shaya bichlal v'yatzam en haklal lelamed. So he evokes one of the Yud Gimel principles that we know, that we use from Rabbi Yishmael. Davar shaya bichlal, this is, baking is something that was part of the general klal of making something chametz. V'yatzam en haklal, it left the klal lelamed to teach me a lesson. And lo lelamed al atzmo yatza, it's not just teaching me I'm liable for baking. Elo lelamed al haklal kulo yatza, it teaches me liability for each activity involved in letting this thing become chametz. That's the idea. We're now about 15-20 lines down. Ve'ema lo se'aseh klal. But maybe I could do it this way. Maybe I could say lo se'aseh is the klal. Don't let it become chametz. And lo se'afeh is the prat. It shouldn't be baked as chametz. That's the prat. That's the unique application. Klal uprat ein bechlal elamasha beprat. And the rule is that we say that that which we said regarding the klal is only meant to apply regarding the prat. Meaning afia in midi acharin alo. Maybe only baking carries this liability, and no other step is included within Asiya. Asiya was too broad, and really it's about baking. So Amar Rabbi Aptoriki. Rabbi Aptoriki teaches us a lesson. Rabbi Aptoriki is unique. I brought you here in the footnote number 4. There's some debate in the editions whether his father's name was Rabbi Dostoy or Rabbi Drusoy, having to do with whether he's a Tana or an Amora. I gave you a reference to HebrewBooks.org where there's a piece on that in a sefer that deals with the various genealogies of the Tanaim and Amoraim. But if his father was Rabbi Drusoy, that makes him Ben Drusoy. But I don't think it's that Ben Drusoy, the one from Shabbos. In any case, Rabbi Aptoriki tells us the following. Mishum dahavi klal uprat hamiruchakin zemizeh. He says, don't make it klal uprat. Okay, don't make it a klal uprat. Why? Because your klal, we saw, is in Vayikra Beis. Lo se'aseh hametz. Your prat is over in Vayikra Vav. Lo se'afeh hametz. They are distant from each other. V'chol klalu prat. Amurchakin zemizeh ain't done in osen v'chlalu prat. If they're distant from each other, it's not a klalu prat. We don't analyze it that way. So take out your klal and prat, and we're left again with the idea that afiyah is representative to teach me that each step carries separate liability. It's Rabbi Aptoriki says we don't do klal and prat when they are distant from each other. That brings us to a brand new tangent on your sheets. If you're following there, it's where we have tangent regarding Rabbi Aptoriki. And we need to know 3 psukim. You have to know these 3 psukim or else the rest of it isn't going to work. Number 1, Vayikra Dalet Chav Dalet, all of this is about where I shech the chatas. So Vayikra Dalet Chav Dalet says that regarding the goat brought by a nasi who sins, you shech the chatas where you shech to the ola. Vayikra Dalet Chavtes, on the other hand, is a pasuk regarding an individual who commits avodah zarah and the goat that he brings, and you shech the chatas where you shech the ola. And then Vayikra Vav Yudches teaches me about a general chatas that you shech to where you shech the ola. Where you shech the ola is in the north, in the tzafon. The gemara for the next 2 days is going to be all about north, beginning from this tangent. But the point is 3 psukim regarding 3 separate chatas cases, all of them teaching me shech your chatas in the north. Why do I need 3 psukim for that purpose? That's what we're going to discuss. Masiv Ravada Barava. Ravada Barava challenges Rabbi Aptoriki. Vamila Kedi, or some said it was the Amora named Kedi, who asked this question. Uchlal uprat hamiruchakin zemizeh ain't done an osim b'chlal uprat. We don't work with klal and prat when they're distant from each other. Vatanya, what about the following brisa regarding those 3 psukim? Vishachat oso bimkom asher yishchat es ha'ola lifnei Hashem chatas hi. I think it's a who there. Maybe a he. So that's our first. That's our first pasuk. That's the dalet chav dalet about the sire of the nasi. So heichan ola nishchetes. Where do you shech the ola? Betzafon, in the north. Avzeh betzafon. So the chadas is in the north too. V'chi anu mikam lemeidin. But does it come from that pasuk? Valokvar neamar bimkom asher tishachet ola tishachet achatas. The general chadas pasuk tells me do it in the north. Halama zeyatza. So why is it that we specified the sire of the nasi? Lekov o shimlo yishachat osa betzafon psalo. To teach me, it's not just a mitzvah, do it in the north, but if you don't do it in the north, it's disqualified entirely. Ata omer lekach yatzis. Is that what is to teach me? Oeno ala shezet ta'un safon, vein acher ta'un safon. Maybe not. Maybe it's to teach me only this one requires the north. Tamal Omar, no, that's why I have my other pasuk, my sire of the Avodah Zarah. V'shachadis hachatas bimkom ha'ola. Yishach lachatas where the ola is, that's a third pasuk. Zeb bana av, now I have a binyan av. Because I mentioned 2 individual cases, the nasi and the yachid, to teach me the nasi and Avodah Zarah, lachol chatos chatunos tzafam, that all carbonos chatas require north. End of brisa. So I have 3 psukim giving me these lessons. Number 1, shech lechatas in the north. Number 2, puzzle if you didn't shech it in the north. And number 3, that the same is true for all karbanos chatas. End of brisa. So he says, taima because of rachmana v'shachadas hachatas. That's because the Torah said shech lechatas. That's what gives it to me. The fact that it said the pasuk by the sar of Avodah Zarah. Halava, but if I hadn't had that pasuk, hava amina, I would have said shezet ta'un safon, vein acher ta'un safon. I would have said only the sar of the nasi requires north. My time, a why? What would have led me to do that? Lav mishum dava klal uprat. Isn't it because I wanted to use klal and prat even though they are distant? Right? Vav agav, muchakin zemi zed, dun an osin beklal uprat. Prat, even though they are distant from each other. And this knocks out Rabbi Aptariki, who didn't want to use Klal and Prat that are distant from each other. To which Rav Ashi says, what are you talking about? Maskev lo Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi challenges and says, really? Hi, Klal uPrat who? Would that have been a Klal uPrat? Look at your order. Your Klal Pasuk is Vayikra Vav. Your Prat Pasuk is Vayikra Dalet. Pratu Klal who? It's the other way around. The Prat's first, the Klal is second. And in fact, what's the rule with Pratu Klal? Not Vinasek Klal Mosif ala Prat v'Yisrabi lehu komili. When you have a Prat first and then a Klal, we expand to all possible cases. So he says that it wasn't Klal uPrat there that made them think it might apply only to the Sayer Nasi. Ela Tana Osoka Kashile. The reason why, and the Tana wanted to say that it would only apply to the Sayer Nasi, is because the pasuk there said Oso. It said V'shachat Oso Bimkom Asher Yishchad Asahola Lifnei Hashem in Vayikra Dalet Chav Dalet. That was what was bothering him. What's the word Oso doing there? V'achi Kiyomer, and this is what he was saying. O Eino Ela Shezet Taun Safon Ve'ein Acher Taun Et Safon. Maybe it's to teach me Oso. This is the one Yishchad in the north, and no other. Because of Rachman Oso, because the Torah said Oso. That's what he wanted to say, and then we defeated it. So the upshot of this is regarding our discussion that you don't do Klal and Prat that are distant from each other. Tosos, by the way, challenges that. Tosos Klal and Prat notes that Rava in the Gemara in Nida says that you do Klal and Prat that are distant from each other. So Tosos answers that that's specifically if they're in the same parsha, at least. The parsha, not meaning parsha like Vayikra Tzav Shemini, but that's actually the way Tosos uses it. He says Chad Vayikra v'Chad B'Tzav Es Aharon. But the point is, one Inyan versus two Inyanim is really what we care about. So you can have a Klal and Prat that are somewhat distant, just not too distant. But the upshot for us is that you can't, is that Klal and Prat have to be somewhat associated with each other. Rabbi Aptariki is correct. And that's why I don't use Klal and Prat for Asiya versus Afiya. For the making of the dough versus the baking of the dough. But the point for us, and for our discussion now, what's going to be our discussion over the next daf, is the issue of Tzafon. The issue of requiring north, and the Torah saying Oso. Because if you're going to tell me that the word Oso regarding the Sire of the Nasi is not to teach me that only this one must be in the north, then I want to know, why did the Torah say Oso? What is the word Oso teaching me? So that's what the Gemara now asks, and we're going to come up with no fewer than four answers for this question. We'll start on it today. We're not going to wrap it. The Gemara asks in the wide lines, now that you say v'shachadas hachatas as your source, to teach me for all of them, oso l'ma'utemai, then what is the word oso doing there anyway? I use v'shachadas as hachatas v'mkom ha'olah already in order to teach me the same is true for all chatos. So we first say l'ma'utei, I'm jumping over the acronym there, but know that it's shachad instead of v'shachad, as they have it in the margin. Oso Bitsafon, Vein Sa'ir Nachshon Bitsafon. There is indeed a chatas which is not brought in the north, and what is it? The goat that Nachshon brought during the Miluim, meaning that the Nasiim brought in general during the Miluim, that was not Bitsafon. Why would I have thought it would be Bitsafon? I would have thought, since we say that you are supposed to lean on it, on this sire that he brings, I would say also that you should require north, just like we do for these chataos. Kamash Mulan, it teaches me that it's not so. What are you talking about? How do you know this issue of smicha for this sire? Smicha gufa minolan. Where do you get this from? This idea that you lean on it? The Brisa says, V'samach yado al rosh ha-sa'ir. This is talking about the sa'ir nasi, Rashi informs us. So it says, you lean on the head of the goat. L'rabo sa'ir nafshon l'smicha diva Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, we see from there that you lean on the sa'ir of nafshon as well. Rabbi Shimon omer, l'rabo sa'ir avodas kochavim l'smicha. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, it's to teach me the sa'ir avodas zara gets smicha. That's what it's actually for. Should we stop with that or go a few more lines? Yeah, sure. It'll be short tomorrow, so let's go a little further. Tomorrow and the next day. The 2-day Rosh Chodesh bonus. So, Maskif La Ravina. So Ravina challenges and says, Teina La Rabbi Yehuda. He says, that's fine if you're Rabbi Yehuda. So you understood that there is smicha on it. Therefore, I would have thought Sar Nachshon is like the other is like these chataos, and therefore I need osa in order to exclude it. That's fine. But Rabbi Shimon ma'ika lememar. What do you do for Rabbi Shimon who said that there is no smicha for sarah nachshon? So Amar le marzutra braid Rav Mari le Ravina le Rabbi Yehuda nami ma'idi is Rabbi ma'idi lois Rabbi. He says, even within Rabbi Yehuda, I have a problem. The fact that we're learning that you do smicha doesn't mean that you're going to do north. That I now need a special pasuk to teach me, no, don't do north. And if you had said, well, I want a binyan av from the other chatos to teach me about sarah nachshon, and therefore I need osa to tell me it's not so, then smicha gufa lishto kramine v'tesiv binyan av. If there really was a binyan av saying this is like all those chatos, then I don't need a pasuk to tell me you do smicha either. Right? Because I would learn that from the binyan av. Ella sha'a midoros lo yalfinon. The answer must be that you don't deduce that which is temporary, meaning the sire that the Nisim bring during the Miluim, right? You don't learn that from the chataos that are brought through the doros. Then I'll go back to here and say, hachanami sha'a midoros lo yalfinon. The same thing is true, not just regarding smicha. You tell me I need a pasuk because we don't learn from those that are ongoing for the one that's temporary. The same thing is going to be true regarding tzafon. So I won't deduce tzafon either. So therefore, that can't be. So then, what do I need tzafon? What do I need oso to exclude? Ella oso ta'un tzafon ve'in hashochet omed b'tzafon. Oso means the animal requires north. It's not about this carbon versus other carbonos. It's that the animal has to be in the north, but the shochet need not be standing in the north. He can be standing in the south. And as Rashi says, v'shochet b'sakin aruka, he can just use a really long knife. Yeah, we'll pick up with that, God willing, tomorrow.